and see if it affects, in any way, how paired rubies react or don't react to natural ship movements. I even have some foil to... Oh, I'm getting too technical, aren't I? Sorry, I have a tendency to do that.
She looked to Rissen, then to the Lopan, who was sitting and rubbing his chin.
Wait, he said. Back up. I need an explanation.
Lopan, Rushu said. I hardly think I can...
How do fish breathe? He said.
Rissen smiled at the Ardent's exasperation. Rushu thought it was a joke, but the Lopan seemed genuinely interested as he pestered her for an explanation. A sudden motion distracted Rissen as Castled rushed up to the quarterdeck and whispered something to the captain, who had been chatting with the current helmsman. Rissen focused on them, on Castled's worried face, and on the captain's immediate frown. Would they remember to inform her, whatever it was? The captain gave an order, then started down the steps. Halfway down, she paused to glance at Rissen, and noticed that Rissen was looking directly at her. So the captain, seeming annoyed, walked back up and trotted over.
What?
Rissen asked, anxious.
What is wrong?
Dark soul casting, the captain said, and bad omens. You should probably see it in person, Rebsk.
6. Cord, the horn-eater woman, dug her hand into the barrel, then pulled it out, letting thick grains of lavis dribble between her fingers. This revealed the worms. Though they were generally the same color as the grain, they uncurled and writhed on the surface, then buried themselves again.
All of the barrels? Rissen asked.
Each and every one,
Castled said, nodding for his sailors to open two more barrels.
I came to get supplies for food, the horn-eater woman said, in thickly accented Alethi, and discovered they are every one this thing.
Rissen watched, troubled, as the sailors demonstrated the presence of worms in the other barrels. She kept meaning to find time to chat with Cord, but the woman had been spending her time in the galley helping feed the crew. That had reinforced Rissen's initial assumption that she was a servant. The Radiance, however, didn't treat Cord that way. So who was she, and why was she here?
The grain has been cursed, Castled muttered. Dark soul casting, performed by evil passions during the storm.
Or, Rissen said, trying to keep a level head, we simply bought some stock with dormant larvae hiding inside.
We checked thoroughly, Castled said. We always check. And look, this first barrel was left over from our original stores, taken on in Thalen City. This other one was from an early resupply, and this one we picked up only 2 days ago. All have worms now.
She caught the other two sailors nodding, muttering about dark soul casting. Wormy grain wasn't the worst thing. Many a sailor had eaten such during a long trip. But the sudden appearance of worms so early after restocking and infesting all their barrels? This would be seen as an omen. It was an old thing, of Thalen superstition. The passions, it was said, changed the world.
Spontaneous genesis has been disproven multiple times, armsman, Rissen said to Castled. This didn't happen because there's some kind of dark soul caster aboard our ship.
Maybe it happened because of our destination, he replied. The men dream terrible dreams full of premonitions, and their dread passion creates omens.
The other sailors nodded again. Storms, with this, and with the death of the ship's pet the day before setting sail? Well, Rissen herself almost believed. She needed to turn this attitude around quickly.
Castled, how much of the crew knows about this?
All of them, Rebsk,
he replied, glancing toward the horn-eater woman.
My sorrows, Cord replied. I did not know this thing was, he was, bad. I asked others.
It is done, Rissen said, turning to Nickley. To my cabin, quickly. The tattooed porter, along with his assistant, quickly carried her up from the hold to the higher decks. Yes, Rissen could imagine the convenience of a small lift, working via Fabriel. When she reached her cabin, she found the Lopan waiting for her.
Something wrong, Gantcha?
Corrupted food stores, Rissen said.
Nickley held her chair while his assistant opened the door.
I need to do something about it quickly.
I could fly to one of our outposts,
the Lopan said, following into her cabin.
Lash some more grain into the air and bring it to us.
A viable suggestion, Rissen said, as Nickley set her at her desk.
She immediately began digging through the notebooks in the bottom drawer. Cheery Cheery lethargically peeked out of her box and chirped in concern.
However, I feel we need another solution.
She pulled out a specific notebook, then nodded to Nickley, who bowed and withdrew with his assistant to stand outside. The Lopan remained, lounging beside the door as it clicked closed. She glanced at him.
He acted so relaxed all the time. He seemed easy to underestimate.
This isn't about just our lack of food, Gantcha, he guessed.
An astute observation, Rissen said, flipping through her notebook. One of the biggest dangers at sea is letting your crew get away from you.
Like that crew from the ghost ship, Lopan said. Who seemed to have gotten away from everyone.
I wasn't referring to anything so dramatic, Rissen said. But our situation could quickly turn dangerous if the crew starts to think I've brought them on a suicide mission.
It was one of the conundrums of maritime life. Sometimes good crews, well-trained, would mutiny. Herbabsk had talked about it, and she'd found herself reading story after story. Spending so long on the ocean, isolated, the crew's emotions fed off one another. Things that were irrational during brighter days started to seem reasonable. Emotions could take on a life of their own, like Spren, and suddenly good crews would become hysterical. Your best defenses were discipline and swift action. She searched her notebook for notes from a specific trading expedition she'd taken with Vastim several years ago. She'd been a brat back then, but at least she'd been the kind of brat who wrote about how annoyed she was. There, she thought, finding the entries. An expedition into the wilderness of Hexi. Vastim had purchased wormy grain out of Triax for mere chips, and she'd thought him insane. Who bought grain with worms in it? But as with all things he'd done, there'd been an explicit lesson in Vastim's actions. Trade wasn't only about buying things and selling them, he'd reinforced to her, time and time again. It was about finding a need that wasn't being fulfilled. It was a kind of soul casting, taking scraps and transforming them into the brightest of gemstones. He'd made her write down a list of locations.
Fetch the captain for me, Rissen said absently, unrolling one of her maps.
She didn't realize until after he'd gone that she'd given an order to a Knight Radiant. Would he be insulted? But when the Lopan returned with Drolwan, he didn't seem the least bit offended, merely curious as he looked over her shoulder at the map.
Rebsk? The captain asked.
We need to take a short detour, Rissen said, pointing at the map.
Rissen made certain the entire crew was on deck to watch as she invited the Hexi nomads on board. A quiet folk, uninterested in the politics of the world, they kept their hair in braids and smelled faintly of the animals they kept as sacred beasts. Their priestly class did not eat flesh, as they'd taken oaths forbidding it, but they considered grubs and insects to be plant, not animal. They were one of six groups Vestim had made her write down as people to whom she could sell wormy grain. To initiate the trade, Rissin read off the phrases that Vestim had required her to record. The nomads sifted through the grain and found it to be good, barely eaten by the worms, which were plump and fat. Careful not to take advantage, Rissin negotiated briefly but firmly. The end result was a large stock of jerky, made by the nomads from the dead of their animals and kept specifically for trades like this. The blankets, given as a gift to Rissin, with the phrase, "for an honored," because of her respectful language, would sell for a good bit as well. The nomads left with the barrels of grain, singing their farewell.
"They actually bought worm-filled grain," the captain said, scratching her head. "I'll admit, Rebsk, I hadn't believed you until just now."
"Vestim never brought you here, I take it," Rissin said.
"Ah, this did smell of one of his schemes. I wonder why this isn't common knowledge. This place should be swarming with traders trying to offload their old grain for profit."
"You'd think that," Rissin said. "But that's not what I learned from Vestim. The Hexi tribes must be approached carefully, and their language is difficult to learn. Act arrogant, and you'll turn them away. Plus, the grain needs to be fresh, good grain, though with worms. They won't buy something that has festered and is full of decay, Spren."
"Still," the captain said. And she was right. This was a mostly untapped market. But who wanted to trade wormy grain when there were fine rugs and jewelry to show off? Who wanted to visit the Hexi wilderness when the grand bazaars of Marat were so close? Only someone who understood need and the true soul of a trader.
"Thank you, Babsk," she thought, as she surveyed her crew and saw far fewer anxiety spren than before. This had mollified them. These last few days had been tense, but the crew were more jovial as they returned to their stations. Rissin had, hopefully, inverted the omen. That was the traditional way to disperse such a thing, to derive a good turn from it. To those who followed the passions, this showed that fate was on your side, even when an omen tried to darken the way. You could always defeat gloomy passions with optimism and determination. Even the worst high storm dropped fresh water. It was all nonsense, she'd come to believe. But it was the most intriguing kind because of the underlying truth. Omens weren't real, but the way people reacted to them was very real. Inverting that was all about perspective. Like how a barrel full of worms was worthless or of great value, depending on your perspective. Nickley picked her up at her request. For simple transfers like this, he brought her in a cradle carry rather than using his sling, which she could sit in. As he walked toward the quarterdeck, a couple of the sailors waved to him and called out a good-natured joke, at which Nickley smiled. "It worked, I see,"
she said, as he deposited her in her seat beneath the sunshade.
"You seem to have made a few friends on board."
Nickley bowed his head. "I guess I shouldn't have doubted. Yes, Brightness. They eat with me now. Ask about my homeland. They are not so prejudiced as I thought."
"They are, and they aren't," she said. "As I said, sailors on a ship can be a tight-knit group. But these here on the Wandersail chose this duty, preferring long-distance voyages that take them new places. They're not the type to dislike someone solely because he looks a little different. At least, no more than they distrust anyone else who isn't part of their ship family. You merely needed to join that family."
Nickley knelt beside her chair as she buckled herself in.
You are also different from what I expected, Brightness. I thought working for a merchant would involve... Well, thank you for the way you treated those nomads earlier and the way you treat me, for your wisdom.
I wish it were my wisdom, Nickly, Rissen said. I was trained very well by a teacher I didn't deserve and can never live up to.
Brightness, Nickly said. You seem to be doing a fine job, in my estimation.
She appreciated the words, but now that she knew how the crew felt about her, she found it more difficult to quiet the voice inside, the one that whispered she didn't deserve to own this ship. She hadn't earned this station. She hadn't made the money, proven her acumen, or worked her way up to being a shipmaster. Everything Rissen possessed, she had been given. There was an uncomfortable truth to the way the captain regarded her. Rissen was untested. She was undeserving. Even victories like the one she'd accomplished today had been achieved by leaning on Vestim and his lessons. She wouldn't stop doing that, of course. Ignoring what she'd been taught, out of some kind of petulant spite, was exactly the kind of thing the youthful her would have done. That voice persisted anyway.
You know, Nickly said, still kneeling beside her chair and scanning the ship, I have this strange, perhaps selfish peace inside me that didn't want the crew to like me. It was easier to think of them all as bigots. He looked down at his feet. That was small of me.
No, just human of you, Rissen said. You know, you still owe me the story of why you left your homeland. Don't think I've forgotten.
It isn't a great story, Brightness, he said. We are a small village, my people. Not much of interest about us.
I'd like to hear it anyway.
Nickly thought for a moment. Rissen had traveled quite a bit of the world, and she'd never seen tattoos like his. They'd been inked over some kind of scar tissue, as if his skin had been carved, allowed to heal, then overlaid with the white tattoos.
I was betrayed, he finally said, by someone I trusted. Soon after, one of us was needed to go to Thelena. My people, though small, like to know what is happening in the great nations of the world. I volunteered, so I wouldn't have to be around the one who had treated me so.
That only raised more questions in her mind. She didn't press him. It didn't feel right.
Did your master have any wisdom to share about traitors? Nickly asked. About how to deal with someone you trust who turns against you?
Vestim said to always read contracts with friends an extra time,
Rissen said softly.
That's it?
I asked him on another occasion to explain. He said, Rissen, being cheated is a terrible feeling. Being cheated by someone you love is worse. Discovering such a deception is like finding yourself in a deep, dark ocean, with nothing around you but formless shadows of things you once thought you understood and enjoyed. It is painful beyond explanation, but that is never a reason to pretend it can't happen. So read those contracts again, just in case.
Nickly grunted.
That's a different kind of wisdom than I'd anticipated. I thought maybe this man lived purely a life of charity.
Vestim is good and honest, Rissen said. But you don't get a reputation for either without some people seeing your nature as an opportunity.
He'd warned her of that fact, too, and she'd often wondered what specific experiences had taught him the painful lessons. He'd never shared the details.
Brightness, Nickly said. I hesitate to say this, but I think you should know. I am the type of person many ignore, and I listen well. I overhear things. I think, Brightness, I think the Radiance and their friends are hiding things from you.
Why would they do that? Rissen asked.
I don't know, but they were talking, and the Ardent told one of them to quiet down lest the crew, or you, overhear. Something to do with the mission. That's all I heard. But I do feel I should point out that the Hornito was the first to discover the worms, and the Radiants still haven't come up with a good explanation for why she's on this voyage.
What are you implying? Rissen said.
No implication. Merely sharing what I heard.
I think we can trust the Knights Radiant, Rissen said.
I'm sure people also thought that 2,000 years ago, Nickley said. Then he sighed and stood up. But I probably shouldn't have said anything. I need to go to the head, but I'll return soon, Brightness.
Rissen discarded the idea that the Knights Radiant had planted those worms. But there were questions that itched at her. How had those worms appeared so suddenly? And what had killed the ship's pet? Rissen realized she hadn't asked. But as the ship set out, she considered. She obviously wouldn't be the only one who understood that omens, despite being nonsense, could have powerful effects on the people who observed them. If someone wanted to interfere with this mission, a few well-placed omens would be an excellent way.
Be careful about jumping to conclusions, she told herself.
The solution was to watch, because if she was right, another omen would soon arrive.
Nickley stepped into the head, locked the door, and turned off the body's sense of smell to avoid being bombarded by the odor of this place. Nickley held up this body's hand and made a fist, pleased by how long the form held. But now Nickley relaxed and the seams in the body's skin split, letting cool air reach into its squirming insides, which shivered, relieved to finally be allowed free motion after keeping tight for so long. At the same time, Nickley closed the body's most obvious set of eyes, its human eyes, which were actually functional, something Nickley was proud of. Most sleepless used prop eyes. That caused their sight lines to be off, easier to notice. With the body's eyes closed, it was easier to feel the distant pieces of the self spread all across Roshar, and Nickley could make them buzz, communicating with the others, speaking directly from mind to mind as its buzzes were interpreted by hordlings bred specifically for the purpose. We, Nickley sent to the others, have a problem.
Indeed we do, Nickley Asorm, sent Alahawithador, who had a low, angry buzz. They aren't responding to your encouragements to turn back. You have failed. Other measures will be required.
The problem is not that, Nickley sent. The problem is that I am coming to like them.
This is not unexpected, Yella Myzin sent.
It had a smooth, calming buzz. It was first, the oldest of the swarms on Roshar. Nickley was the 24th, youngest of them.
I like the bondsmith, for example, though I know he will destroy us.
He will not, Zierdil sent.
Its buzz was punctuated and sharp.
He has made the decision of honor.
That is why he will destroy us,
Yellamyzin replied.
He is more dangerous now, not less.
This is a different argument, said
Alahawithador, who was third, a swarm almost as old as Yellamyzin.
You like these humans, Nikleasorm. That is good. We are so bad at imitating them, and you learn well from your travels. More of us should spend time studying humans to become like them.
Plus, Yellamyzin said, we should have compassion for those we must cull. It is good you like the humans.
Must we cull them, though? Nickly replied.
Humans are a fire that must be contained, Yellow Mice Zin said with its calm buzz. You are young. You were not yet separated during the scouring.
I would like to try again to ward them away, Nickly sent.
This is a mess, said Alahawithador, the angriest of the swarms. It should not have gone this far. You should have killed them before this.
They should not have found the ship, Zierdil sent. This would all be contained if it hadn't been discovered.
It was sent to sink, Alahawithador replied. It could not have survived storms without help. Its discovery is no coincidence.
Arklomadarian crosses us again, said Yalamaiszin the first. It meddles more and more. It has met with these new radiants.
Are we certain it was wrong to do so? Nickly asked. Perhaps that was the wise move.
You are young,
Yalamaiszin sent, calm and sure.
Youth is beneficial in some ways. You learn faster than us, for example.
Nickly could imitate humans better than the others. When the swarm that had become Nickly had been separated, it had already contained hordlings evolved for this subterfuge. Nickly had further evolved them, and was now certain that the body didn't need the tattoos to cover the seams in its skin.
Arklomadarian is dangerous, Nickly sent. I can see this. But it is not as dangerous as the true traitors. Both are equally dangerous,
Yellowmyzin sent.
Trust us, you do not bear the scars of memory older swarms do.
We must listen to the youthful, Zierdil snapped. They are not set in their ways. The humans that come this time are not pirates first, looking only for lucre. They are more persistent. If we kill them, there will be more.
My plan is the best,
Alahawithador sent with a feisty set of buzzing noises.
Let them breach the storm.
No, Yellowmyszin said. No, we must prevent that.
At this point of conflict, the question was sent to all of the swarms, all 20 that still accepted the leadership of the first, to ask, was it time to sink the human ship? The responses were tallied. It was a stalemate, they decided. Half wanted to let the humans reach the storm, where they would either fall to the winds or enter the realm of the sleepless. Half wanted to kill them immediately before the storm. Several, like Nickly, abstained from the vote. Nickly's own swarm buzzed with relief and satisfaction at the uncertainty in the others. This was an opening.
I would like to try one more time to ward them off, Nickly repeated. I have an idea that I believe will work, but I will need help.
This was sent to another vote, and Nickly's bodies, the distant ones not on the ship, all vibrated with anticipation. Yes, the vote came. Yes, Nickly should be allowed to try again.
It hurts us to kill radiants, let alone one of the sighted, said Yellowmyszin the first. You may try this plan. If it fails, however, I will hold another vote. And you must be willing to take more drastic measures.
7.
Does something about the crew seem strange to you? Lopin asked as he lounged in the air about 3 feet off the deck, hands behind his head, floating beside Cord.
The sturdy horn-eater was mixing something that smelled good. It was pungent with the spices that he associated with rocks cooking, which wasn't spicy hot, just full of other flavors. Interesting ones. This dish, though, also had an oceany scent she said came from seaweed. Who ate weeds? Weren't her people supposed to eat shells?
Strange, she asked Lopin. Crew?
Yeah, strange.
He watched several of the sailors go tromping past, and they kept shooting him looks. Rua trailed after them in the air, invisible to everyone but Lopin and Cord, who, like her father, could see all Spren.
You all strange, she admitted.
Each word was hesitant, but her Alethi was progressing well.
So long as I'm the strangest, Lopin said. It's sure one of my more endearing traits.
You are very strange.
Excellent.
Very much strange.
Says the woman who likes to munch on weeds, Lopin said. That's not food, Mithra. It's what food eats.
He frowned as several more sailors passed by and a couple made strange Thalen gestures toward him.
See that? They cheered when we came on board. Now they've gotten all weird.
Things had been better after the stop in Hexie to sell that grain, and Lopin approved of the jerky. But now, as they were reaching the halfway point in their journey, everything had gotten odd. There was a strange tone to every interaction, and he couldn't quite figure out what it meant. He glanced up as Huyo streaked in overhead, then lowered himself down to the deck. He delivered a letter to Cord, from her parents most likely, and tucked a few others into the inner pocket of his uniform coat for Rissen, who had asked him to visit a nearby island and receive letters for the day.
Thank you, Cord said to Huyo, lifting up the letter. Is happiness to hold him?
Welcome, Huyo said. Was easy. Not problem.
Watching them interact in Alethi was amusing. Why were there so many languages, and why didn't everyone just learn Herdazian? It was a great language. It had names for all the different kinds of cousins.
Huyo, Lopin said in Alethi so as not to leave Cord out. Has the crew been treating you strangely?
No, he said. No sure.
Not sure, Lopin said.
Yes, not sure.
He set down his satchel, which carried span reeds and other equipment. He reached in and brought out the small box of aluminum plates and foils that Rushu had sent with him to use in some experiments trying to communicate back to her on the ship.
You know this? Huyo asked of them.
Aluminum,
Lopin said, still floating above the deck a few feet.
Yeah, it's weird stuff. Can block a shard blade, Rua tells me, if it's thick enough. They get it from soul casting, though only a few can make it, so it's pretty rare.
Can get from trade, Cord said, in peaks. We trade.
Trade, Huyo said. Who trade?
People in Spren world, Cord said.
Huyo cocked his head, rubbing his chin.
He is strange metal, Cord said. Does strange things to Spren.
Strange, Huyo agreed.
He packed up the materials in his satchel and went wandering off. Hopefully he'd deliver them to Rushu rather than playing with them. Huyo sometimes got himself into trouble that way.
Your people, Cord,
Lopin said, turning in the air like he was lounging on a sofa.
They have water up in those peaks. How? It's cold, right?
Cold away from town, she said. Warm near town.
Huh. That sounds interesting.
He is,
she smiled.
I love him, our land. Didn't want leave. Had leave with mother. To find father.
You could return if you wanted, Lopin said. Wouldn't take much to have a windrunner fly you.
Yes, she said. But now, out here, he is dangerous. Good dangerous. I not wish to go. To love of home, yes. But now that I see him, I cannot return. Not with danger here, for people.
danger that will go my home.
She turned from her mashing and looked across the ocean.
I was scared of places not home, and now I find things that make scared are also things that make interesting. I like dangerous things. I did not know this.
Lopin nodded. What an interesting way to see the world. Mostly he enjoyed listening. He liked the way Cord's accent made a cadence of her words and the way she drew out some vowel sounds. Plus, she was tall, and tall women were best. He'd been very curious to find she was only a few years younger than he was. He hadn't expected that. Alas, he had stuck Huyo to the wall for her on 3 separate occasions, and Cord had not seemed to find it impressive. He'd also cooked her chowta, but she already made it better than he did. Next, he'd have to find a way to show her how good he was at cards.
That's interesting, he said. You like things you're afraid of.
Yes, but I did not realize this thing. Afraid thing. Yes?
You didn't realize that something fearsome, something different, could be so intoxicating. I think I get what you're saying.
He thought for a moment, drinking the light from a big garnet gemstone. The others called him silly, but he thought the different colors tasted different. He eyed Cord. Was she impressed by how casually he floated? No way to know without pointing it out, which was the opposite of being casual. So he put his hands behind his head and thought more about what she'd said.
Cord, he said, your father. Is he really in danger because of what he did? Saving Caladan? Killing Amaram?
It had been several months since the event, and Caladan had persuaded Rock to remain in Eurythiru for the time being, mostly to give his family a season to rest from their extended trip. However, that wouldn't last forever. Rock was increasingly intent on returning to his homeland to face judgment.
Yes, Cord said softly. But because of him, his doing, his wanting.
He made the choice to help Caladan, Lopin said, but he didn't choose his birth order.
But his choice to go back, his choice to ask for, I do not know word, ask for choice.
Judgment?
Yes, maybe,
she smiled at him.
Do not afraid for my father, Lopin. He will choose his choice. If he must go home, I will stay, and Gift will stay. We will do his work. We will see for him.
See, Lopin said. See Spren, you mean?
She nodded.
Are there any around now? Lopin asked.
Rua,
she said, pointing as Lopin's Spren came darting over in the shape of a fanciful flying ship.
And Silanora,
Huyo's Spren. She rarely appeared to Lopin.
Windspren in the air, wavespren in the water, anxiety spren trailing the ship, almost unseeable. And,
she shook her head.
And what?
Lopin asked.
Odd things. Good gods, but uncommon. Apaliki tokoa'a.
She struggled to find the right words, then took out a piece of paper, she often carried some, and did a quick sketch.
A lockspren,
Lopin said, recognizing the arrowhead shape.
5,
she said.
Was none. Then was 3, then 4. More each few day.
Huh. Well, he was glad she was watching. She'd been hesitant to come on the trip, as she hadn't thought she would be of any use. He'd encouraged her since he knew she wanted to see the world more. And here she was, seeing interesting spren.
I don't know if lockspren are something to be worried about, he said, but I'll have Rushu reported anyway. Queen Yasna or one of the others might think something of them.
Cord nodded, so he cut his lashing. That made him land on the deck with a thump,
a little harder than he'd intended. He patted the wood and grinned, feeling foolish. Too bad Huyo hadn't been watching. He'd have enjoyed that. Lopin jogged off to find his cousin, who, as Lopin had feared, was in their cabin poking at Ardent Rushu's span reeds. He appeared to have completely disassembled one.
"Lopin," Huyo said in Herdazian, "this aluminum has fascinating properties. I believe the captive Spren are reacting to its presence almost like prey react to a predator. When I touch this foil to the stone, they push to the other side of their confines. I hypothesize that the aluminum interferes with their ability to sense not only my thoughts of them, but the thoughts of their conjoined half."
"You know, cuz," Lopin said in the same language, "those span reeds are way more valuable than the locks you use to break apart. You could get into trouble."
"Perhaps," Huyo said,
tinkering with a small screwdriver to undo part of the gemstone's housing.
"But I am certain I can reassemble it. The Ardent Lady will be completely unaware of my investigation."
Lopin flopped down on his bunk. He'd asked for a hammock, like the crew used, but they'd acted like he was crazy. Apparently beds were in short supply on a ship, which made sense. Everyone else got storming hammocks. Who'd want a bed?
"Something feels wrong about this entire mission," Lopin said.
"You're merely bored, younger cousin," Huyo said, "because the crew are too busy with their work to be entertained by your unruly antics."
"No, it's not that," Lopin said, staring at the ceiling. "And maybe it's not even this trip. Things are just off lately, you know?"
"Oddly, though everyone always expects me to be able to decipher what you're saying, I find myself at a loss most of the time, and not only when you're speaking in Alethi. Fortunately, you're usually around to explain. At length, with lots of adjectives.
You know, Cord is getting pretty good with Alethi."
"Good for her. Maybe she can learn Herdazian next, and then someone will finally interpret for me when I'm lost."
"You'll pick it up eventually, older cousin," Lopin said. "You're sure the smartest person in our family."
Huyo grunted. His inability with the Alethi language was a sore spot with him. It didn't click in his head, he said. Years of trying, and he hadn't made much progress. But that was all right. It had taken Lopin, sure, years to learn how to grow an arm back after he lost one. So what was bothering Lopin? Was it the things Cord had said? He took his rubber ball out of his pocket and practiced infusing it, then sticking it to the ceiling, then catching it again when it dropped. The Voidbringers had come back, but they weren't actually the Voidbringers. They were just Parshmen, but different. And the war had started, like in the old stories. There was a new storm, and the world had basically ended. It all seemed so intense. But in reality, it was so storming slow. They'd been fighting for months and months, and lately it seemed like they were making less progress than Huyo on his Alethi. Kill some of those new singers with the strange powers, they were called fused, and they'd get reborn. Fight and fight and fight, and maybe capture, sure, a few dozen feet of ground. What a party! Do that for a million centuries, and maybe they'd have an entire kingdom. Shouldn't the end of the storming world be more dramatic? The war against the invaders felt depressingly like the war over the shattered plains. Sure, Lopin kept an upbeat attitude. That helped everyone. But he couldn't help making the comparison in his head. His side were the good guys. The Radiants, Urethiru, all of it, he'd decided they were, despite bad choices by some of the Radiants in the past. But he thought about the shattered plains, and how
stupid that battle had been, stretching all those years. How many good people had it killed? He couldn't help worrying they were now headed into a mire of creme water just as bad, if not worse.
"I wish," he said, "that this ship could move faster. I wish we could be doing things. This is taking too long."
"I'm doing things," Huyo said. He turned around in his seat at the desk, holding up the repaired span read. "See? It has been returned identically to its previous state."
"Yeah? Does it still write?"
Huyo made a few circular scribbles on a piece of paper from the satchel. The conjoined span read, in turn, jerked across the paper in a single line back and forth.
Huyo said. "You person who has rotten fruit for a head," Lopin said, jumping to his feet. "You broke it."
Huyo repeated, then made another scribble. The pen reacted as before, moving left and right on the page in accordance with his motions, but it didn't go up or down on the page when he moved his pen to the top or bottom.
"Huh. Great," Lopin said. "Now I'm going to have to tell Boss Ardent Lady, and she will say, 'Lopin, I can see that you are very careful and often not breaking things, but I'd still rather your older cousin not have rotten fruit inside his skull instead of brains.' And I'll agree."
"They have a ton of these things," Huyo said. "There's at least sure 20 pairs in the storage they sent us. I doubt it will be an exceeding burden if one is malfunctioning." He scribbled again. Same result. "Maybe I could
try to repair it," Lopin said, skeptical. "I suppose. You're sure super smart, but..."
"But I'd probably break it further," Huyo sighed. "I thought I had it figured out, younger cousin. They don't seem even as complicated as a clock."
"And how many of those have you managed to put together correctly after taking them apart?"
"There was that once," Huyo said. Lopin met his eyes, then they shared a grin. Huyo slapped him on the arm. "Return those to the Ardent Lady. Tell her I will pay for the broken reed if it's a problem. It will have to be next month, though."
Lopin nodded. Both of them, along with Punyo, gave most of their radiant stipend to the family for helping out with the poorer cousins. A big chunk went to Rod's family. Radiants were paid well, but there were a lot of cousins who needed help. It was their way. When Lopin had been the poor one, they'd always helped him. Lopin walked out onto the deck, proud of how well he'd adapted to the swaying of the ship. However, he stopped as he noticed a large group of sailors congregating on the left side of the ship. The, starboard side? He wandered over, and then lashed himself upward to see over their heads. Something was floating in the water nearby, something large, and something that was very, very dead.
8. Rissen felt a sinking sense of dread as Nickley carried her to the side of the ship. The sailors had bunched up here, attended by anxiety spren, like twisting black crosses, and a few globs of fear spren. They made way for Rissen, and Plamri, Nickley's Thalen assistant, hurried forward and set down a high stool for her. She gripped the rail to steady herself as Nickley placed her on the stool, then she nodded for him to retreat. That made room for the captain to step up and stand beside her. Sitting there, Rissen could peer over the side of the ship to see what the others had been whispering about. A dead Santhid. A decaying shell and husk flipped over on its side, its whited eyes staring toward the sky. It was enormous, nearly a third as long as the ship itself. The large marine creatures were incredibly rare. She had believed them extinct, but had enjoyed stories from her Babsk about them. They supposedly rescued drowning sailors, or trailed ships for days, improving the moods of those on board. More spren than animal, they were somehow able to magnify peace and confidence. Likely that was as much fancy as the passions, but no sailor she'd ever met would speak ill of San Thedin, and meeting one was among the best omens in the ocean. She didn't need to ask to know what finding a dead one would do to the mood of her crew. The sailors sensed this was coming, she thought. They've been on edge these last few days, waiting. Perhaps, like Rissin, they'd noticed the pattern and had expected a third worst omen. To them, this would be proof the trip was cursed. And, as she looked down at that large, unnatural corpse, she found herself questioning. Sure, omens seemed like nonsense, but she'd assumed the Voidbringers were only stories and they'd returned. Her mother had always laughed at the idea of lost radiance wandering the storms as spirits, but now she had two radiants on her ship. Who was Rissin to say what was fact and what was myth? No, she thought. There must be another explanation. Could someone have planted this? She'd been expecting a third omen like the grain or the dead pet, something a person could achieve in secret. But this went far beyond such simple plots. Did she really think someone hiding among her crew had managed to find a near-mythical creature, kill it, and deposit it in the ocean without raising suspicion? No one has to have planted it, she told herself firmly. This could still be a random, unlucky event. She glanced down again and swore that oversized eye was looking at her, seeing right through her, even in death. As decaying chunks of the Santhid began to float off from the main body, she felt as if she were being watched, and she became suddenly aware of the crowding sailor's mood. Dark, too quiet, no mentions of what a bad omen this was. They already knew. There was nothing more to say.
"We'll be turning back after this," said Alstben, a tall sailor who liked to spike his eyebrows. He looked at Rissin. "No way we continue."
Storms. It wasn't a question. Rissin searched for support from the captain, but Durlwan folded her arms and didn't contradict the sailor. Doing so would likely invite mutiny. This crew was probably too loyal to do such a thing as kill their captain, but... Well... If the Wandersail returned to dock with its captain, armsman, and owner locked up because they'd gone mad, who would blame the crew? Particularly after an omen as sure as a dead Santhid. Rissin nearly gave the order. She knew when a trade deal was mired in creme, when it was better to walk away with your goods than try to force an accommodation. And yet, that meant giving in to the superstitions. And someone was trying to spook her crew, even if this specific event was random. Turning back meant giving in to whoever that was. Most importantly, turning back meant giving up on helping Cheery Cheery. Sometimes the trade was too important to walk away from. Sometimes you had to negotiate from a position of weakness. "Why is it floating?" Rissin asked the sailors. "Shouldn't it have sunk after it died?"
"Not necessarily," Kostled said, emerging from the rear of the crowd. "I've passed a ship lost to ramming before. Days later, bloated corpses still floated in the water, nibbled at from below by fish."
"But something this big?" Rissin asked. "With that shell?"
"Great shell corpses can float," another sailor said. "Pieces of them, after they're dead. I've seen it."
Damnation. Rissin didn't know enough to keep pushing on this line of reasoning. Yet it seemed so unlikely that they had randomly run across this right in their path. Maybe there was another option. Maybe it wasn't one person working to undermine her mission, but a larger organization. The enemy had fused, creatures with powers like radiance. This could be a light weaving. or a soulcast dummy, or any number of things. She didn't want to give up. Not without more time to think and maybe a chance to inspect this corpse. So she took a deep breath. Sometimes a negotiation was all about attitude. "Very well," she said. "Let us do what is right, then. Get the boarding hooks and get ready to tow that corpse."
"Tow it?" one of the sailors asked. "Surely we're not going to try to profit by selling the shell?"
"Of course not," Rissin said. "What kind of craven do you think I am? We're going to give the creature a proper funeral, and if it seems the beast's will, we will keep the shell for the luck it represents and present it to the queen. It is fortunate we happened along, so the body might be burned as befits the creature's majesty."
"Fortunate?" Kostled asked.
"Yes," Rissin said. She had trained herself not to feel intimidated when seated among a crowd of standing people, but it was difficult not to feel her old insecurities, as so many of them turned to stare down at her, skeptical, even angry.
"Attitude," she reminded herself. "You will never sell anything if you don't believe it's worth the asking price."
"Someone killed this poor thing," Rissin continued. "Look at those gouges on the side of the corpse."
"Bad luck," a sailor said. "Extremely bad luck to kill a Santhid."
"Which we did not do," Rissin said. "Someone else did, and incurred the bad luck. We are lucky to have found the creature so we can witness what was done to it and see the body cared for."
"We shouldn't touch a Santhid corpse," said Kistled, folding his arms.
"I've seen their shells hung proudly in Thalen City," Rissin said. "There's one at the Naval Academy."
"Those weren't killed by malice," Kistled said. "Besides, they washed up on the shore, found their way there."
"Like this one," Rissin said. "Made its way to us. Here. How vast is the ocean? And yet we happen across this relatively small body. The Santhid's soul undoubtedly led us here so we could witness and care for the corpse." She pondered, as if thinking of it for the first time. "This is a good omen. It came to us intentionally, a sign that we are trusted." She hid the uncertainty she felt, knowing her argument was full of holes and sinking fast. She decried superstition, but now she relied upon it to make this argument? Nevertheless, it seemed to work. A few sailors nodded. That was the thing about omens. They were made up, imagined signals of something nebulous, so why not make them up to be something positive?
"We always consider it a good sign when one washes up on shore," a man said. "Why is this different?"
"We need to spread the word," said another, "about how someone out there is killing Santhidin. It wanted us to find it so that the news could spread."
"Let's hook the corpse," Rissin repeated, "and carry it to shore."
"No," several voices said from the crowd, but she couldn't see who. "That's bad luck."
"If it's bad luck," Rissin said, her voice louder, "then we've already invited it by letting our hull touch the corpse. I say the best thing to do now is care for the body. We will burn the body and leave the shell on a nearby island. We will purchase some floats at a port on our way home and then tow it to Thalen City. That's what the Santhid would want, for us to keep the shell as a mark of the respect it showed us."
The crew fell silent. Rissin had taken part in her fair share of tense negotiations, but this one made her hold her breath, her heart thundering, like she was trying to contain a storm inside her.
"I think," the captain said eventually, "that I do see a good omen in this. I've always wanted to meet a Santhid in the wild. I have burned prayers that one would someday come to me. This creature's soul must have known that.
Yeah,
another sailor said.
Notice how it doesn't stink? It should smell, rotting like that. I don't see a single rot spren. Good omen, that. It wants us to come near.
Grab the hooks, the captain said. If its spirit is restless, I certainly wouldn't want it thinking we ignored its last wishes. The sailors, blessedly, responded to her order. Rissen had given them an escape from their ill luck, and the captain had certified it. That was enough. Some went for the boarding hooks, which had ropes attached for use in holding the wandersail to enemy ships. Others returned to their posts to help keep the ship from drifting too far from the corpse. The captain remained standing beside Rissen's chair. Tall, proud, in control. Rissen had